Professor Stephen Barr is a physics professor at the University of Delaware and the author of the new book, Modern Physics and Ancient Faith. Professor Barr is my guest this morning on Catholic Forum. Good morning.
Good morning. It's nice to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here this morning, Professor. Before we talk about your new book, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. I grew up in New York City. I went to parochial school, Corpus Christi School, on the west side of Manhattan, up through sixth grade. I'm one of four brothers. Then I went to a school called Horace Mann, went to Columbia University. I grew up in the Columbia area, and went on to do my graduate work at Princeton and got my PhD in 1978 in physics.
Hmm. And how did you end up at the University of Delaware?
Well, I was sort of a nomad, as many people who go into academics are. Uh-huh. You go from being a graduate student to a postdoc, and then you get another postdoc. And so eventually I ended up with a faculty position at the University of Delaware. It's just that was the vicissitudes of the job market, I guess.
Yeah. How long have you been in this area?
Since 1987.
Oh, okay. Great. Great. Now, your new book, Modern Physics and Ancient Faith, mm-hmm. is a book about that combines physics and faith, which some people would think is a strange combination. How did you get interested in that topic? Was it your Catholic background and your scientific career kind of?
Yeah. Well, it's not as if I have ever found any particular conflict between science and religion, but I've always been interested in science since I was small, and I mean that's been my life, mm-hmm. mathematics, physics. I've also been a believing Catholic all my life, and so it was natural that over the years I've thought about these issues. And I guess the reason I wrote the book is that people have asked me questions about science and religion over the years, and it occurred to me that there was no one book I could recommend that they read. And so I felt that somebody ought to write one. mm-hmm. There are some good books out there, but there was no book that said everything that I thought ought to be said on the subject. And that's why I wrote it.
Your colleagues in the science and math fields, did they find that was it unusual for you to be a practicing Catholic, and did they question that?
No, not really. It turns out that where I work at the University of Delaware, in something called the Bartol Research Institute, there are 13 professors, and four of them are practicing Catholics. Now, that's highly unusual, actually. But one meets, you know, plenty of people who are religious, including practicing Catholics. But on the whole, I would say the scientific world is, you find more unbelief than you do religious belief. Mm-hmm. But that may not just be the science world. You probably find that in the academic world as a whole, mm-hmm. Even in the humanities.
Is your book aimed at scientists to try to convince them of the existence of God, or is it about aimed at Christians or people who believe in God to tell them about science?
Both. Actually, that was one of the things that made it a little bit of a challenge to write the book. It's written to try to bridge the gap between science and religion, to deal with the questions of science and religion, and it's both written for religious people who may not know very much about science beyond what they studied in high school. So mm-hmm. I try to write it at a level that's accessible.
I could understand.
I hope so. I explain some pretty advanced things from particle physics, which is my field, theoretical mm-hmm. particle physics, cosmology, and quantum theory and so on, some very advanced things, but I try to explain them in a way that's accessible to the broad audience. But I also, so it's for religious people who might want to know what does science really tell us that might be of relevance to religious belief. But it's also, I had another eye on my scientific colleagues to try to get them to understand religion, to take it more seriously. And so I actually explain a lot of theological ideas in the book. Mm-hmm. And also that made me keep the argumentation at a a level. I didn't dumb down or oversimplify or the science. I wanted it to be at a level where a professional scientist would have to meet them on their level, but yet make it accessible to the ordinary person.
Mm-hmm. Now, does your book prove the existence of God?
No, that's not what... No, I'm not trying to do that, though I do discuss some traditional arguments, like the argument from design, that the universe shows a structure and a harmony and an orderliness that is evidence for design, that there's a mind behind it.
Uh-huh.
I'm not trying to come up with some sort of mathematical proof of the existence of God. I guess the major thesis of my book is that science, a lot of people have the idea that scientific discovery of the last few centuries has more and more pointed away from religion, mm-hmm. that it has somehow debunked religion. The way the story of science is often told is the beginning with Galileo and Copernicus, that everything we've discovered somehow is giving us a picture of the world that is contrary to the picture of the world that religion gave us. And the thesis of my book is that actually the discoveries of the 20th century, especially, a number of the great discoveries of the 20th century, really have point in a direction that's more consistent with the religious view of the world than with the materialist or atheist view of the world. And so my book talks about five great discoveries of the 20th century and how they're sort of more compatible with a religious viewpoint than an atheist one.
Can you give us a couple of examples of that?
Yeah. Well, some of them will probably be familiar to most of your listeners. One of the five is the Big Bang Theory.
Mm-hmm.
Historically, people who were pagans, most of the ancient Greek philosophers who were pagans and modern atheists have tended to imagine that the universe was infinitely old. The idea that there was a beginning of time, that there was a point before which there was no time, that really is a Jewish and Christian idea. That comes from the first words of the Bible, the first words of Genesis. And so, really, up until the 20th century, there were many arguments coming from science that actually seemed to point towards a universe that had no beginning. And there was a sort of a tension with the Jewish and Christian view. But now, in the 20th century, it was discovered that apparently the universe does have a beginning. And so there is a sort of a vindication for the religious view of the world. Mm-hmm. A second thing I talk about, again, many listeners might be aware of this, are things called anthropic coincidences. There are many features of the laws of physics that have been noticed over the years that seem to be sort of adjusted or just right to make the universe able to have life in it. If things had been a little bit different in one way or another, if the laws of physics had been changed just by a little bit in one way or another, the universe would have been such that it couldn't have had life as we know it, at least. I also talk about a third subject has to do with the mind. It's increasingly popular among scientists and people who regard themselves as scientific to say that only matter exists and that the human mind, there's nothing about the human mind that can't be explained by just saying that we are highly sophisticated animals, that we are just essentially machines, that our minds are just, our brains are just computers, mm-hmm. very powerful computers, but computers. But there are a number of discoveries. There are a couple of great discoveries in the 20th century that hint or suggest that there's more to the human mind that can be explained just in mechanistic terms as a machine. One comes from my field of physics. There is an argument based on quantum theory that goes back to the 1930s that says that if you try to understand the way quantum theory is put together, it leads you to the conclusion that there is something about the mind of the observer, as it's called in quantum theory, something about the mind which cannot be completely described by physics. In fact, there are some great physicists of the 20th century who explicitly said that quantum theory implies that the mind cannot be, the human mind in particular, cannot be explained completely by physics. One was the late Sir Rudolf Peierls, one of the great physicists of the 20th century, who said that outright. He said, the idea that you can describe the mind and the knower, the knowledge, the capacity of the human being to know completely by physics is wrong. He says something is something that goes beyond the physical description. Mm-hmm. So those are some of the things that I talk about in the book. But there's a whole range. That's why I thought they had to have a whole book to lay it out. There's a lot. People have a misconception. There's a lot that was discovered in the last 100 years that if you look at it in an unbiased way, it really points towards religion, not away from it.
If you look at it in a scientific way.
Right? Yeah, though I think a lot of scientists, you see, have been... don't look at it in the right way. They've been trained or brought up to believe, as many other people have been brought up to believe, that somehow that science is always smashing, you know, pedestals, you know, always, mm-hmm. always debunking mm-hmm. what people had traditionally believed. And I don't think that's correct. I think there's been, as I like to say it, the story of science has had some plot twists in the last 100 years. Many people thought that science was marching away from religion, but really... it sort of doubled back, I think, in the last 100 years, and has uncovered a number of things that took people by surprise and that point in the direction of religion.
What have some of your colleagues in the scientific community, what has been their reaction to your book?
Well, it's only come out a couple of months ago.
Oh, I see.
I haven't done a lot to market it among my colleagues yet. I'm going to do a little bit more about that, with that, but... So there hasn't been any time for a reaction. I'm not sure most of my colleagues are aware that it's come out yet. It's selling pretty well, but
what's the audience? Do you know who's buying your book?
I don't know who's buying it. It's put out by University of Notre Dame Press. It's an academic press, and they're not used to selling that many copies. They usually publish books that are, as most academic presses do, that are sort of technical for, you know, professors read them more than anyone else. But this one is. Fairly selling very well for a book put out by University of Notre Dame Press. In fact, they have to keep reprinting it in the last several months. And,
that's good.
Yeah, it's. I think it took them by surprise. It took me by surprise. It's doing pretty well.
That's a pleasant surprise.
Yeah,
pleasant. How can our listeners get a copy of your book?
The best way to get it is probably through the internet, Amazon.com. Mm-hmm. If you go to Amazon.com and look up the name of the book is probably the best way, because there's another Stephen M. Barr out there, believe it or not, who writes books on mathematics.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I think there's actually several Stephen M. Barrs. But you can try Stephen M. Barr with a PH, Stephen with a PH, or a look up under the title of the book, Modern Physics and Ancient Faith. You can also get it online at barnesandnoble.com or go to the University of Notre Dame Press has a website. You could order it through there.
Mm-hmm. Terrific. What's next? What's your next book?
I don't know. I was kind of thinking that someday, when I have more time, I might write a book on great either Catholic scientists or actually great clergy scientists. One of the things I mentioned in one of the first chapters of my book, people are not aware of this, most scientists, that there were a surprising number of important scientists or scientists who made significant discoveries who were Catholic priests, even bishops and monks, not just Gregor Mendel, everyone's heard of Mendel, but there were a number of others, all the way from the Middle Ages up to through the 20th century. In my book, I list about 15 of them.
Wow.
For example, one of the founders of the Big Bang Theory, of cosmology there are two people who are regarded as the founders of that theory. The one was a Russian physicist, a mathematician named Friedman, and the other was a Belgian priest and physicist named Lemaître. So there are many such figures in the history of science, but nobody ever hears of them, or they only hear of the more famous ones. But.
Well, I hope this book and your next book make a big bang.
I hope so.
Professor Stephen Barr, thank you so much for spending time with us this morning on Catholic Forum.
Thank you very much.
On